Hey, everyone. Welcome to tonight's call. Let's get it rolling. And this mag. All right, there we are. Four key factors affecting your weight. And we're just going to hop right into it. No quote tonight. So let's get going. So there's no magic pills. That's what I wanted to start with, because I put this lesson together tonight because I was reading a book this weekend called The Obesity Code. Now, I've just started it, you know, and so there's some good stuff in it. But one of the bones I have to pick really with weight loss in this culture in general, the weight loss industry, is this reliance on just this one dimensional magic pill. And, you know, so this book just inspired me because basically they pin everything down to one cause of your weight. And it makes me crazy. And so, again, I'm not saying that he doesn't have good points. I'm not saying he doesn't know more than I do, for sure. And I'm not saying that I'm wrong, perhaps, in certain instances. But I think on a whole, I think what I want to share tonight, I think, is really, really important. And so I hope it helps you understand weight loss in more detail. And in addition to that, inoculates you, vaccinates you from falling prey to all of these magic pills, you know, or magic solution, or all of a sudden it's this thing. And I don't know, you know, maybe one day there will be, but until then, you know, I think there's better ways to go about it. So, that being said, what I want to reinforce and what I think what's going to serve you well is when you think holistically, okay, that your body is a very, very complex system. And so is your weight. Your weight's a complex system. It's not just one simple thing. It's not just calories in, calories out. It's not just reduce the insulin. It's not just like one thing, right? You're a really complex system. And so, you know, again, I think that, you know, talk about hypnosis. I think one of the main hypnosis factors going on in the modern culture, as you've heard me say this a million times, but it's short-term thinking. How fast can I get results? And it's oversimplified, right? Because people just want fast, easy results. And they just want everything kind of boiled down to one culprit. And it's just not that way. It's just not. And it's not going to be that way if you're looking to achieve long-term weight loss, weight maintenance. Okay. So yeah, you can lose some weight for a short period of time. We all know this, by just not eating. But even that doesn't last long-term. Okay. And so I think if you start thinking holistically, it will eliminate a lot of frustration that you may have felt in the past, okay? Because thinking holistically, understanding your body as a system, is a more accurate understanding of your body, your weight, and your health. And so I think that's going to help you out a lot. Letting your body heal is a concept we've talked about before. So again, we're going to go into this in a little bit more detail, obviously, in a few moments. But I want you to put this idea in your mind, especially, you know, you start becoming 40, 50, 60, you know, how have you treated your body over your life? Okay. Now again, this isn't something you necessarily want to hear. I get it. But it's like, you know, we tend to have this unconscious presupposition when it comes to weight loss that our body, well, hey, when I was 20, I did this diet and I lost a bunch of weight. Well, now I'm 60 and I did the same thing, but I'm not losing the weight. And one of the kind of mistaken beliefs we create is that our body stayed the same the whole time. And sometimes I use the metaphor, the analogy of a car, right? So it's like if you have the way your car drives and the components of your car, when it has, you know, 100 miles on it, it's a lot different once the car has 150,000 miles on it, right? The systems within the car operate differently. Now, I also want you to understand that that car can be restored, right? And your body can be restored. But when you get a bit older, if you haven't treated your body right, there is part of this process of losing weight and living at this new weight. A part of that is allowing your body to heal, to get back to operating optimally. Okay. And in some cases, it won't get back to operating optimally. And again, I know that's not, you know, that's not what you want to hear. I understand that. But this is so important because this really comes right down to motivation. You know what I mean? Like if you're expecting that your body is the same body as you were when you were 20 and just need to cut the calories down, well, once it doesn't work, you get demotivated. Okay. And so as hard as it can be, sometimes we need to look at things as honestly as we can. And so an aspect of this whole process is allowing some extra time, you know, again, if you're over 40, 50, 60, allowing some extra time in your, within your goal that you're thinking, for your body to heal. Okay. It's that simple. And again, of course, that goes right in line. And I don't think I can have a lesson without mentioning thinking long-term. Right. And so again, when we start thinking holistically, when we start understanding our body as a system, in order to fix it properly and then maintain it and then optimize it, it's a long-term process. Don't let that scare you. I say it every week so that you get used to this idea. You know, it's funny. I was talking to a client last night, and I've been working with her for almost a year now. And I'm telling you, once you get past the year of living this way and working on this, it's magical, because it's unlike a diet. You know what I mean? So you're not killing yourself to follow some crazy meal plan. And it really does start to change the conversation in your head. You have a different conversation in your head when you're starting out. Again, even the presuppositions you have, the way you think about weight loss and eating and all of these things, it's so much different when you're first starting as opposed to when you've been doing it for a year. And then it's way different when you've been doing it for a year compared to when you've been doing it for 5, 10 years. Okay. So I always want to put that idea in your mind that this is a process of learning. It's a process of mastery, and mastery in any area takes time. Okay. So don't let that freak you out. You know, again, you're going to get results. Just stick with it. But I want you to think long-term results. Let's get long-term results. Okay. That's the way to go about it. So let's kind of hop in, right? So I'm talking about four factors that I wanted to talk about that are affecting your weight. Okay. The four that I really want to talk about tonight. So the first one is calories, right? And so again, this is what made me crazy with this book, The Obesity Code. Again, I'm not saying, I think for sure insulin plays a big part. We're going to get to that in a moment, but let's face it. We've all reduced calories and lost weight if we do it long enough. Right. And we've seen this over and over again. It's the most tested weight loss methodology that exists. So when you all of a sudden have a book that needs to be sold by saying something extremely controversial, like calories and calorie deficits and levels don't matter at all, then to me, it makes me nuts, because what it does is it makes you feel like you're starting from scratch all the time, right? Every weight loss plan has to be completely unique. Oh, we just figured this out. Oh, hey, calories don't matter at all. So I don't believe that. And so anyways, I wanted to mention this because again, it got me all fired up with this book. So let's talk about calories for a second. In my opinion, it's the number one influence of your weight, right? And so when we talk about energy balance, what we're talking about is calories in, calories out. And so this is the number one factor in weight loss, in my opinion. And where people that will say, and this is more towards the keto, the Atkins is really kind of going this direction of saying, well, it doesn't matter about the calories, because when you cut calories, your body readjusts, right? Again, it's a complex system. Our body is really, if you do think about it, all the systems are really in service of homeostasis, keeping everything at the status quo, balancing, maintaining. Okay. And so again, this process is real, that when you cut calories down, the expenditure out goes down, right? No question. So you cut 500 calories, your body doesn't stay the same. Your body adjusts a bit, right? And so the calories out goes down. Does it go down 500 calories? I don't think so. I think this is why people lose weight. And if you stick with, again, if you do count calories, and you keep a calorie deficit, right, where you're consuming less than you're burning and outputting, then you'll watch people lose weight right before your eyes. Now, counting calories is very difficult. All right, so we're going to get to some other things here, because counting calories is kind of a miserable process. It's proven to be ineffective long term because it's difficult to maintain it. Our brains are not built to consciously monitor every food we eat. Okay. So yes, there are hormone levels in our bodies that are influencing our hunger. Okay. And so we'll get to those in a moment. However, at the end of the day, be clear, calories are the main thing that are influencing your weight. And there are things that are influencing the calories you want to consume. Okay. And like I said, we'll get to those in a moment. So let me talk to you just to, again, you understand calories, right? But again, I do want you to understand this is why diets are bad. Okay. Because when you crash the calories down in a dramatic way, yes, your body gets used to that lower level of calories and slows your metabolism down. And when the problem is though, is when you're on an unsustainable diet and you crash those calories down for a while, and then you go back to eating how you used to eat. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of people will diet, lose some weight, go back to eating how they did, and then put the weight back on plus some extra. Okay, because they have trained their metabolism to slow down a little bit. Okay. Now, again, the theory is over time, your body will, you know, again, the metabolism will kind of return and everything will go back to normal. Okay. But again, what we're looking to do is create sustainable ways of eating so that we can maintain it long term so our body gets used to living at that level. Okay, that's the goal here. So a couple techniques, you know, we've gone into this in much more detail in the past, but I just want to mention them. Calorie density, right? This is one of the key things to manage your calories. Because again, if you're going to manage your calories, you can't keep yourself for long in a state of extreme hunger, right? It's an unpleasant way to live and it doesn't last. Again, every cell of your body starts screaming for food. Right? That's not a good quality of life. So the way around that is calorie density. And what that means is that if you look like a hamburger, right, and you look how much volume that is, right? So it's relatively small. If you make one the size of a hamburger with your hands, it doesn't take up a lot of room in your stomach, but there's a lot of calories in it. Okay. So it's a very calorie dense food. So if you want to reduce your calories and still feel satisfied, the secret is to eat foods that have a low calorie density. Okay. And so the example of that is fruits, salads, vegetables, right? These are foods that, again, take up a lot of space. The volume is bigger, right? Think about the size of a really big salad and compare that in your mind to the size of a hamburger. And the hamburger's probably got, I don't know, 400 or 500 more calories in it, depending on which kind of hamburger you're talking about. So again, this is important to remember because what triggers you to feel full, to feel satisfied in part is the volume of the food you're consuming. Okay. And so if you've struggled with hunger in the past, one of the secrets is to find foods that are low calorie density and eat the hell out of them. It's that simple. You'll be consuming less calories and you'll still feel, you won't feel as hungry. Okay. The other thing that really, this has been in the past year or so, this has been a big difference for me, is the consideration of nutrient density. Okay. And so what this means is really starting to look at your food in terms of how much nutrients are in it and how, again, I should have wrote variety too, nutrient density and nutrient variety, right? This is really, really important because again, what we're talking about here is hunger and your body's satisfaction, because there is an aspect of hunger that it is your body saying to you, we need nutrients. Right. And so there's a theory that at least in the Western diet that we're lacking micronutrients, because if you're eating a mainly processed food diet, many of the micronutrients have been stripped out of it during the processing. And so you're not getting the micronutrients you get when you're eating natural whole foods. Okay. And so because your body's not getting the micronutrients it needs, it's sending you a hunger signal. And so while you've gotten all the calories you need, you're not getting the nutrients you need. And your body's saying, I'm hungry. Okay. So when you start looking towards foods that are more nutrient dense and more nutrient variety within them, you're going to feel more satisfied. Right. And so, again, I'll show you in a few moments which food specifically. So just don't worry about that part. Next, increase your awareness. Right. This is key. Reading labels is absolutely something you should do. Now, I want to be clear, because reading labels forever sucks. No one wants to do that. But what you want to do is you want to get fluent in reading labels. And so what you do is you expect to commit, I don't know, a month or a couple months to really reading the labels of everything, right? Get fluent in what foods are. Again, their calorie levels, their ingredients, right? The different nutrient breakdowns of them. Start to understand what you're consuming. If you haven't done this, you're going to be shocked. I promise you. You will be shocked at the ingredients in these foods. You'll be shocked at the amount of sugar, the amount of salt, right? And other factors of the calories of them sometimes. Okay. If you don't read labels, if you're not aware of what is in the foods that you're eating on a somewhat regular basis, it's you're flying blind. You know, it's very difficult because we as humans underestimate. We just do. You don't have to argue about this. You don't have to question it. We just do. If you accept this as a truth, it will influence the way you eat. Okay, because we underestimate just by nature. It's a cognitive bias that we all have. And we all think we're eating less than we are. Right. And so one of the best ways to kind of deal with that is, again, to read the labels. Get, I keep saying fluent, but I'm trying to think of another word. I'm thinking of, but either way, you want to start reading the labels. And like I said, a couple months, what'll happen is that you'll start to understand. You know, you build up kind of an unconscious kind of library of what foods have what in them. You'll understand what ingredients are in what, and what some of their nutritional values are of them. Okay. And so it's not something you have to do forever. I don't read labels much anymore because I eat the same foods pretty much. We all do. Okay. And so what you want to do is you want to educate yourself and understand what are in the foods that you're typically eating so that you can make good choices. Because if you don't, again, like I said, you're just flying blind. And it's so frustrating when you put effort into something and don't get results. Don't let this be one of the reasons. All right. So again, understand the labels. And then finally, as kind of alluding to this before, and like I said, I'm not spending too much time on this one. But again, remember, there was a lesson I did in the past. What was it called? How to Eat Less. And so there were specific examples. We go into more detail on all of these. Okay. So go watch that. If you want to delve into this particular topic more. But so, yeah, cut 15 to 30% at a time, right? And even 30% is a little bit high, in my opinion, because the secret here is that you want to create a caloric deficit. And so you want to cut the calories down, but you don't want to do it in a way that's going to freak out your body or freak you out, right? And so we all know there's diets out there. I mean, geez, there's the HCG diet, which cuts down to 500 calories. So, I mean, you're talking, that's an extreme. That's only 75% for some people. But again, you kind of want to keep it under the radar, you know, again, psychologically and physically, right? We don't want to go into starvation mode, right? Because our body shuts down. And so now we're miserable. We're not eating and our body's not burning any calories because it thinks it's in starvation mode. So it's trying to hold on to every, you know, bit of energy it has. Okay. So again, my opinion is if you cut 15 to 30, 20%, you know, is kind of a sweet spot for me. That, you know, that's why I look at it. Now, one thing I'll tell you is if you want, just to kind of put this in a different frame, if you think about your weight and you think about how much weight you want to lose, an interesting way to think about it is to think about it in a percentage. Okay. So if you're 200 pounds and you want to lose 50 pounds, right, that would be 25% that you want to drop. Right. And so that can be really interesting. Now, again, it's not exactly mathematical this way, but what I want you to understand is that if you start thinking about, okay, 25%, that gives you kind of a nice baseline of where to kind of look for your calorie cutting. Now, say you're 400 pounds, you know what I mean? And you want to get to 200 pounds, right? That's 50%. But again, you don't want to just cut 50% of your calories off right away, right? It's very stressful. So again, we go back to the long-term thinking. And again, if you can intentionally, you know what I mean, develop and cultivate this sense of patience, this just simple joy of living a healthier life, appreciating that you are doing healthier things, you are cutting the calories down, and your weight is going in the direction you want it to. Okay. But again, I would suggest that you keep it between 15 and 30%. Otherwise, again, you kind of freak your body out. Okay. So the calories are the first one and what I believe is the most important one. Now, the next one, right, is really important, okay? And so it's a hormone, and it's insulin. And so this is the fat storage hormone. And so basically what insulin does in the most simplistic way is it's kind of like a key. And what it does is it unlocks your cells so that they can absorb the glucose in your blood. So basically all food at some point turns into glucose. And it goes into your blood, and then it goes into your cells and powers the cells. And the insulin is kind of the key that opens the door to those cells and lets them in there. Okay. And so when we have a ton of insulin, basically it's telling the cells, open up the doors and store all the energy. And again, it's when we get too much, it stores it into fat. Okay. And so again, just real simple. And this is a scientific just truth that the more insulin you have, the more fat there's going to be. Because again, it's a hormone that is flooding your body and telling all the cells, hold on to the extra energy, hold on to it. Okay. And so this is a problem. So we want to be aware of insulin and we want to manage it because it's out of control in our modern culture. And we'll go into reasons why in a moment. And so again, simply the increased insulin makes you hungrier, right? Because it also affects leptin, which is a hormone that lets your body know you've eaten enough, right? So we want to be aware of insulin. Again, you may have, depending on how much understanding you have of this whole topic, yes, insulin's the thing that's driving type 2 diabetes, right? Type 1 diabetes is people just don't produce enough insulin from the get-go, okay? But type 2 diabetes is from insulin resistance. And so how do we get insulin resistance? It's just like drug resistance. If you keep doing drugs, your body gets used to it and it starts to resist them. The effects get lower. And so you need to do more. And so it's the same thing in your body. If you're consistently spiking your insulin levels, your cells become insulin resistant. And what your body does to deal with the insulin resistance is it starts producing more insulin. Okay, and becomes a vicious cycle. And so this is what we're talking about. This is one of the aspects of healing your body, okay, is doing this with insulin and getting this under control. So one of the key ways that insulin's getting driven up in our society, in the Western society, is with carbs. Okay, but I want to be clear here because I think without question, carbs get a really bad rap in our society. And so I see some people that are absolutely deathly afraid of all carbs, and I think it's misguided. And so I want to give you my, the way that I view them. And so basically there's two types of carbs, right? There's basically starch and there's sugars. And so, the main ones that we want to watch out for are sugar, right? So we know this sucrose, which is table sugar, just the typical sugar, you know, and high fructose corn syrup are two of the main sources of sugar in our diets, and they wreak havoc with insulin, right? If you consume sugar or high fructose corn syrup, you're going to spike your blood sugar. You're going to spike your glucose levels, which is another way to say you're going, because again, as soon as you spike your glucose, all that energy goes into your blood. The body says, oh my God, we got to get this out of the blood, release the insulin. Okay. So spiking your blood sugar is spiking your insulin. It's the same thing. And so sugar is one big one. And let me make a quick note here. So before we even get to refined grains, here's the thing with sugar, and this goes hand in hand with reading labels, okay, is that sugar is in a lot of things. Now, again, I know we've done a lot of sugar lessons here, but I think the best way to get your sugar under control, again, obviously one way is to reduce the sugar you already know you're consuming. We know that. But I would say the second biggest one is to recognize all the hidden sugars that you're consuming that you may not even be aware of. And you will be shocked if you're not a label reader. I guarantee you'll be shocked at what's got sugar in it. And so this is so important because there's nothing worse, again, than putting all this effort in and not getting the results you want. And it's because you don't realize that you're consuming lots of sugar. And they are sneaky about it. The way food labels go, right, the first ingredient is the one is the most prevalent ingredient. So what they'll do with sugar is they have 61, I believe, different names for types of sugars. And what they will do is they'll use lots of different types of sugars so that they don't have to put sugar as the number one ingredient. Okay. It's devious. So again, you want to be aware of how much sugar's in there in America. Again, I'm not sure where this is at now. They were supposed to start this. Trump was going to, he was going to put it off for a while, but they were going to start requiring nutrition labels to start explicitly listing the added sugars. Okay, so again, I've started to notice that some foods, some have it and some don't. And so I'm not sure where that goes. But again, start paying attention. If you see the added sugar, that is basically the sugar we're talking about here. It's the refined sugars that are added to the product, not the ones that are just naturally, you know, inherent in it. Okay, so sugar is the big one. And the second one that's just as big, maybe even bigger actually, is refined grains. And this is the thing. the thing with refined grains is that they have been stripped of their outer shells, so they're able to be absorbed very quickly. Again, they're very processed and they're powdered. Same with sugar, by the way. You know, sugar, it doesn't just come out like that. It's extremely refined and processed. And all that refining, that processing of sugar and of grains, what it does is our body absorbs it almost instantly. And what that does is it causes the glucose in those foods to instantly go into our bloodstream and spike our blood sugar, spike our insulin levels, make us insulin resistant. Okay. Tell our body to store fat, store it, store it, store it. Okay. So this is so important, right? So, it encourages overconsumption as well. Okay. It really does. It wreaks havoc on your hormonal systems. It wreaks havoc on your brain, right? Literally, a lot of times these sugar, affects the pleasure centers of your brain, the same pleasure centers of your brain that are affected by cocaine and nicotine. Okay. So again, sugar and refined carbs, refined grains specifically, are really what you want to keep your eye on and start to limit. So again, you want to avoid and limit flour, right? Flour is a key one and it's in lots of stuff. Flour and sugar, right? They're in so much stuff. White rice, again, brown rice is better. White rice is more refined, quicker absorbed, right? A lot of snack foods got flour in them, sugar in them. Pasta, right? Again, a flour. You don't have to stop eating pasta completely. You want to limit it though. They have alternatives that are, I eat a pasta that has chickpea flour in it. Okay. So again, it affects your glucose differently, right? So again, there's a lot of good alternatives now for these. You don't have to give things up completely. Bread, right? Again, you have more refined breads and then you have less refined breads. Go with the less refined breads and begin to limit them. Okay. It's that simple. Now, what you're not seeing on here for carbs is you're not seeing vegetables, right? Yeah, vegetables are a carb, but you can eat them. They're not spiking your glucose levels. They're not flooding your body with insulin. So, you know, again, you know, fruit's a different story. Okay, that's a little bit different because it's fructose. But again, the studies I read, because the fructose, when you're eating fruit as a whole, it's bound to the fiber molecules. So again, it doesn't have that spike effect as much, you know? So again, what we're really talking about here that you really want to look out for. Now, again, don't get me wrong. Maybe you can refine things. When you get down to your final 10 pounds, you might have to get more specific. But right now, when you're starting out or in the middle of it, until you get to that final kind of stage, the main things you want to focus in on, sugar, refined grains, okay? But vegetables, eat the heck out of them, okay? They're not spiking your glucose levels. So I want to make this clear. All right. Because there's a lot of people doing Atkins or keto and they don't want to keep it up because they can't eat vegetables. They can't eat fruit. And I don't know, in my worldview, I don't see those being the problem. Okay. I see the sugar and the refined grains being the problem. And of course you can eat them, but when you really, if you pay attention and see how much you're consuming, it is very easy to way, way over consume sugar and refined carbs. And every time you're doing that, the image I want you to have in your mind is you are spiking your insulin levels. You're literally releasing a chemical in your body that tells your body to hold on to the fat, make more fat and hold on to it. Okay. So that's what you want to watch out for. Now, the next hormone I want to talk about. So we got calories. Oh, okay. Well, let me tell you about what to eat instead, right? I told you I'd tell you this. And I show this to you every couple of weeks here, but this is what I believe in. And I think this, without question, has been proven to be the healthiest diet on the planet. Will it help you lose weight the fastest? It's up there, but maybe it won't. Maybe you'll lose weight faster if you only eat meat for a couple of weeks or a couple months. Okay. But, and again, not in all cases, there's a lot of people in the world. So there's always examples, you know, something else. But over time, I got to believe that this here is going to be your healthiest, core central diet that you want to make. But again, you can make your choices. I don't eat meat, but I don't have a problem with meat. But here's the thing. If you want to get the best nutrient variety, right, the biggest, widest variety of nutrients, these are the foods that you would want to eat. If you want to get the most dense nutrient foods, these are them. Okay. Beans are the secret weapon. And, you get fiber with them, which is so key. It makes you feel full, helps your microbiome, really a miracle food. Beans are beans. In the Blue Zones, a book they wrote about the healthiest populations on the planet of people that live the longest, all of them, every single one of them, consume lots of beans, a main part of their diet. Okay, beans are huge. Berries, right? Fruits, great for you. Again, lots of nutrient variety, density, cruciferous vegetables, other vegetables. Again, I'm not going to do a lot here because this isn't a nutrition lesson here right now. Again, whole grains, right? Brown rice, barley, wild rice, farro, quinoa. These are much more natural in their natural state, and they're not absorbed as quickly. Okay, and so typically they're going to be better for you in the terms of what we've been talking about. Nuts, again, very good. You don't want fried and salted nuts. Those are really high calorie, but raw nuts are super great for you. Okay, next thing, right? So we talked about calories, then insulin, and now cortisol. And cortisol, right, if you don't know, is a stress hormone. It's basically, now here's why this matters. When you have cortisol is a natural hormone. All these hormones are natural, and in their right place, they're not good or bad, is what I'm saying. That's what I want to be clear. Insulin's not good or bad. It's when we're consistently over consuming sugar, over consuming refined carbs and or refined grains and spiking our glucose levels, what we're doing is we're having a chronically elevated level of insulin. That's a problem. Cortisol isn't bad. It's good in small doses, right? In a natural setting, cortisol is essential. Okay. But in our modern day environment, cortisol is chronically elevated. Okay. And it results in insulin resistance. Again, it basically just causes your cells to hold on to the fat, and it leads to increased insulin in the blood, right? Which leads to weight gain. So it's real simple. It promotes hormonal imbalance. Again, our body's a system. So when we're flooding it with cortisol, it affects other hormones, other systems. And again, we just don't operate optimally, right? And cortisol can also make you hungrier, right? And so some of the key drivers of cortisol, right? And this is where it gets interesting, because I'm going to tell you some of these things, and I want to give you some solutions in a minute, but I wanted to give you some understanding of why we're doing it. Right. So if we can lower our calories, if we can reduce our insulin levels, if we can reduce our cortisol levels, we're really setting ourselves up for easy, successful long-term weight loss and ultimately maintenance. Okay. So the key drivers of cortisol are stress, right? Stressful situation, or fight or flight and or fight or flight situations. Now, again, in nature, fight or flight situations were fairly rare. I know sometimes we think back and think everything, you know, we're constantly being chased by lions, but that's typically not the case. And so in a natural environment, there really weren't constant stressors. There was stress. And when there was stress, it was intense, but it was momentary. What's going on now in the modern world is that we tend to live in a state of constant stress, right? And again, it's not life or death, but our body doesn't know the difference. And so we can get stuck in traffic. And all of a sudden feel an intense amount of stress, we can literally interpret it as a fight or flight response. And our body starts dumping out a bunch of cortisol. We can get a fight with our boss, fight or flight situation, dumping out cortisol. We could freak out about, you know, a bill we have to pay, stress, cortisol. Okay. So if you're really serious, this is where, again, the systems, the holistic approach, because again, sometimes, you know, I'm going to go through the 8 habits in a moment. But it's like when we look at things, oh, I should meditate more. How the hell is that going to help me lose weight? This is how it supports you in lowering your cortisol levels. It helps you deal with stress in different fight or flight situations in a more calm way, right? Same with sleep. So there's lots of factors. We'll get into in a moment and kind of look at them through this prism. But this is what I mean. It's got to be a holistic approach. And now this is interesting to me because you'll see sometimes people will, okay, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to do this crazy diet. And they're freaking out, right? They're irritated. They're frustrated. You could tell they're stressed, right? They hate living this way. They're having trouble eating, all of this stuff. And so they're cutting the calories down, but they're spiking their cortisol levels at the same time. And so it kind of balances itself out and eliminates all your gains, all your successes. You see? So again, I picked these four things because there's other factors too, but I think these are big four, and this cortisol one is often overlooked. And so again, they all work together. So yeah, I think calories is the number one thing. It's not the only thing though. And this, you know this because you've cut calories before and you haven't got the weight loss you thought you were going to get. And so now when you look at it, what was your food composition? Were you eating lots of sugar and grains, even though you were eating less calories? Were you flooding your body with insulin? Were you stressed out the whole time and flooding your body with cortisol? Was that negating the calories that you reduced? Okay, we got to think on this bigger level. And when you do it, it's magical. Okay, because you set yourself up for the right thing. You know, you can't just focus on one of these or else you're going to get subpar results. You know, it's that simple. Okay, so we got calories, insulin, cortisol, and epigenetics. Now, this may be something you've heard about, maybe not. I'm not going to say I'm no expert on genetics. I'm not really an expert on science, but this is such cool stuff that I want to share it with you. And this is really all about the long term. Anything I can tell you that will help you appreciate the long term approach to losing weight, I want to tell you about. And I think epigenetics really, the way I think about my health and my weight, epigenetics is in there. And in order to appreciate epigenetics, you really have to have a longer view, you know, of what you're doing here. So basically epigenetics is really it's the study of how we turn on and off genes, right? Humans have about 20,000 genes, you know, which really isn't much more than a chimp. As a matter of, I can't remember now, but it's like, I think there's like, I'm going to mess this up, but it's like a tomato or something has like 18,000 genes. So it's not the number of genes that makes us unique. You know, again, I don't know if they know exactly what it is, but long story short, basically the genetics that we're born with, it's kind of like light switches. And you can, or like circuit breakers. Let's go with that metaphor. The circuit breaker in your house, and some are on and some are off, and they can flip. Right? That's what they have found out. This is amazing. This is a relatively recent discovery. And so, yes, we are given a genetic blueprint, but then as we live within that blueprint, we can literally turn off and turn on different genes. Right? Again, so we can influence how our genes are expressed. And this is huge. This is a big deal. Now, you're not going to make yourself, you know, a foot taller. You know what I mean? It's within a boundary for sure. But within that boundary, there's a lot of influence that we can have over it. And so the big things that influence our genetics, what you eat, right? So there's a theory out there, if you've ever heard this, where they'll say food is information. It's literally like computer code that causes our body to flip on certain genes and turn off certain genes. Okay, where you live, the environment you live in affects which genes you express, how you live your life, your lifestyle, right down to your sleep, your exercise, how much water you drink, right? The quality of the food you eat, if you're in a happy relationship or a stressful one. All of these things literally influence our genetics. Okay, so this is big. And so I'll give you another analogy that I saw this today, and I really like this one, so I want to share it. Because again, I'm trying to understand this. I have a very simplistic understanding of it, but it's really cool. And I think we're going to hear a lot more about this in the future. So again, the movie analogy they go with is that basically, if you think of a movie, the actors within the movie are like your cells, okay, that you have in your body. The script that they're reading from is like your DNA. Okay. So again, the script is kind of that structure that the actors are going to read, right? And of course, your cells read your DNA. But director is kind of like the equivalent of the epigenetics, right? Your ability to express or not express, you know, certain genes. And so again, just like a director can eliminate certain scenes, they can light it different ways. You know what I mean? It influences the overall movie. And so again, if you think of a movie, you know, the same movie, same actor, same script, one's directed by, you know, Quentin Tarantino, and one's directed by Steven Spielberg. Right. Or one's directed by Steven Spielberg and one's directed by Woody Allen. They're going to be two totally different movies, even though the elements are the same. Okay. And so this is what epigenetics is all about, and we can influence them. And I want to share, I didn't write this down, but I read this book. It was called The Relaxation Response, came out in the 70s. And since then, they now are able to literally measure genes and track them. And he wrote a follow-up to that book about 10 years ago. And basically what they did is they took two groups of people. They had a group of people that had been living a mindfulness-based life, right? They're meditators. They did kind of Eastern, you know, Qigong, Tai Chi, stuff like that, yoga. And then they took another group that were Western. They didn't do any of that stuff. Again, they genetically tested them. And then what they did is they took the group that had never done any of that stuff and they trained them to do very basic meditation. And it was like literally like 15, 20 minutes of meditation / visualization for 8 weeks. And within that 8 weeks, over 500 genes began expressing themselves differently. And again, I couldn't get into the details of it. I don't really understand them. But simply, the 500 genes started expressing themselves in the way that the healthier mindfulness-based people genes had expressed from the beginning, okay? Which is another way to say that all these genes flipped into a more healthy expression, okay? So again, we're getting right down to the code of who you are as a human here, okay? Is influenced by your lifestyle. And so, yeah, it's going to take longer for you to appreciate these benefits, okay? But they're at play. And so I could tell you, this happened to me. I tell this story. When I was growing up, I'd always had love handles. And so I started eating a lot different. I started living a totally different lifestyle. And I just always, again, the love handles were still there. And I just never, they're just probably going to be there. And then though, I don't know, it was like 5, 6, 7 years later after I'd been living a totally different lifestyle. I did a lot of yoga. I was just eating more naturally, eating cleaner, all the rest of it. They started going away. Now, again, I can't say if it's because, I don't know, at some point it was just time for them to kind of shrink or if it was an epigenetic thing. I tend to think of it as epigenetic. And so I can see the shifts in who I am as a person. Again, the core is me, but I am a different version of myself. I'm a healthier version of myself than I was when I was 19 because I live a healthier lifestyle, you know, for the last 25 years. Okay. So again, I want you to think bigger than this and not restrict yourself to what you think you are. Yes, you are you, but there's a really healthy, happy version of you. And it's going to take a little while to express it to its fullest. But again, this is what's waiting for you. Okay. So again, we have calories, insulin, cortisol, epigenetics. And I think one of the best ways to influence all of these is the 8 habits. Right. So I'll just go through them real quick. You're probably tired of hearing me talking about them, but you can't hear this enough. And this is why I recommend these habits. Okay. And I hope after hearing this that you give them more importance. Okay. So the water, right? Water, it helps regulate your hormones. It helps reduce cortisol. Okay. Cause your body feels, again, if you start restricting, if you're dehydrated, it's a more stressful environment. Okay. When you're hydrated properly, it's less stressful, less cortisol. It helps you feel fuller so you can make better food choices, reducing calories. Okay. So it helps a lot. I don't know this, but I would guess that it does affect your genetics, right? I mean, how could it not? If all that other stuff influences it, how could having a properly hydrated body not influence your genetics, right? I'd have to imagine it would. Relaxation, right? Specifically, when you're more relaxed, you make better food choices. When you're more relaxed, your cortisol levels will begin to lower, right? Your insulin sensitivity will improve. Epigenetically, absolutely it affects. As I said, the relaxation response, they literally tested relaxation, visualization, meditation. That's what they did. And in just 8 weeks, it had an influence on over 500 genes. Okay. So relaxation absolutely affects those. Breathing. Okay. Again, it goes into that. It's right in line with the relaxation. I always just kind of put them together. The difference here is that you're oxygenating your body, which I tend to think as well. It makes you more relaxed, helps you choose better foods. I think it also creates a less stressful environment, right? So I would not be surprised if, again, relaxation, oxygenating your body to the proper level probably reduces cortisol. I mean, again, it seems intuitively that it may. And I think when you oxygenate your body, I absolutely think that affects epigenetics as well, okay? Sleep, 100%, right? You heard me not long ago. I did the lesson I did based on the book, The Why We Sleep, which was such a groundbreaker. Sleep absolutely affects all of those. So I know I've said this 100 times. I'm going to say it 101. They did a study where they took a group of people and they basically, they measured everything they were eating. And what they changed with these people is that sometimes they'd let them sleep, you know, a full 8-9 hours every night. And sometimes they would restrict their sleep to less than 6 hours. When they were sleep deprived, they would eat on average 300 more calories a day. Okay. So it absolutely, it affects your calorie intake. Sleep, they also did a study where they found out that it affects your insulin sensitivity, right? So who knew that? But literally the amount of sleep you're getting is going to influence your insulin sensitivity. It absolutely affects your cortisol, okay? Because if you're not sleeping properly, it's a stressful environment, and it certainly affects your epigenetics without question. Again, with sleep, you want to give yourself at least an 8-hour sleep opportunity. You may not sleep deeply the entire time, but you want to at least give yourself an opportunity to sleep in a congruent place every night for at least 8 hours. Nourishment, right? Again, when you nourish yourself with high nutrient variety types of foods, again, it's going to influence your calorie intake. It's going to influence your hunger, your appetite. It absolutely affects your insulin. Right? Because when you're nourishing yourself with healthier, whole plant-based foods, your glucose levels aren't going to spike and crash, okay, leading to you to have a more insulin sensitive body. Cortisol, again, I couldn't speak to the specifics of that, but I would imagine it would. And then nourishment absolutely affects epigenetics. Again, food is code. It is information. It's computer code for your digital body, right? So it literally writes code in. If that makes sense to you, again, I'm kind of pulling from a book that I read. But basically, you know, it influences literally the genes that you express. So the higher quality nourishment you're consuming, the better. Movement, right? Movement/activity/exercise. All of these things are helpful. Let me make a quick movement, though. As we get into exercise, we talked about this before, that's going to affect calories in a different way. Not necessarily bad, but we are a system. And so when you start increasing calories out, when you start increasing energy out, your body is going to balance that by making you hungrier. Okay. So just understand, when you exercise intensely, you're probably going to feel hungrier. Okay, your body needs to rebuild. So on the other side of that, you know, again, there's exercise taking it to the max with it. You do low impact exercise, activity, movements. Again, that's all better for your body, right? And it's going to support you with all four of those. Meditation, again, it's just on and on. I could talk about meditation, but it helps you with all four of those, helps you deal with situations better. Epigenetics, that's, again, one of the things they tracked. Meditation, relaxation were two big factors of that. And then finally, gratitude, right? And gratitude affects all of them as well, specifically the cortisol, because what gratitude does is it gives you a different set of glasses to view the world in. And so crappy things can happen, but when you have a gratitude mindset, when you see the world through a lens of gratitude, those crappy things literally can be interpreted as, at the very least, something kind of, you know, neutral, right? It's not that bad. And then literally, if you have enough gratitude, you could see crappy things going on in the world and literally be able to appreciate why they're good, you know? So again, gratitude is really such a powerful habit. And again, I believe it affects all four of those. Okay. So cool. I hope you enjoy this. You know, it was a lot of fun. I wanted to put this together for you, 'cause like I said, I was all fired up and, you know, it was just making me crazy to read that. Like I said, I read that book. Yeah. Okay. It's not just calories. I think that's a great insight. It's not just calories. There's other things going on, but, I don't think it's enough to just say, oh, calories don't matter. I don't know. I've not seen the evidence for that. And so it makes me crazy. So, all right. So, all right. Hey, Connie. So, yeah, I'm glad to be on this call, right? It's a good one. Again, I'm always happy to go over this. I think it's so key and it's missing. Added sugars are showing up. Yeah. Right. So, like I say, the sugars, you can actually get a better handle on them now because you can see them in the thing. Never heard of epigenetics. Okay, cool. I'm glad you said that. I should do a whole thing on that. I'm actually researching it more. It's relatively new. It's a bit over my head. I'm not really a scientist here, but just kind of understanding some of it. It's fascinating stuff. and it's exciting. You know, anything that loosens the constraints that we hold of ourselves and that are actually real, you know, is pretty exciting and really cool. So I'm glad you like that. How do NLP strategies play into this? Well, to a certain degree, this is all NLP, because by understanding, it's like, right, I could say, okay, stop eating carbs, right? I think we've all heard that at this point. But I think, so the NLP part of this is, well, what's your unconscious perception of carbs, right? And so for different people, it's different. And so I know I've had plenty of calls with people that are afraid to eat vegetables, right? They're afraid to eat, you know, just any form of carb at all, right? Because they're so worried about it. And so when you start to understand its specific types of carbs and you understand what it's doing to your body in terms of insulin, I think it's helpful, because understand this, right? So let's go with sugar, for example. I think this is easy. With sugar, it's like, okay, I shouldn't eat sugar. It's bad for me, right? So someone has that belief. What is the unconscious image or picture they have in their mind of sugar? If you're consuming sugar regularly, but you know it's bad for you, it's because whatever unconscious representation of sugar you have, it's not that bad. So this really describes people's behavior, right? Think about this. If there's something you're doing that you know is not good for and you want to stop doing it, but you keep doing it, right? How do we explain that? Well, consciously, logically, we know we shouldn't do it. We have all the reasons why, but we are compelled to do it. Well, it's because unconsciously, the way we're thinking about it, the associations we have to it, are mild, are weak. Okay. And so what I'm looking to do, you know, with sugar is, instead of saying, oh, I shouldn't eat sugar, it's bad for me. Maybe people know, oh, I shouldn't eat sugar, it's bad for my teeth. Right. Those are kind of vague, though. If you're struggling with your weight, if you're worried about prediabetes or diabetes, then all of a sudden understanding, oh my God, every time I eat sugar, it's being absorbed into my body like that. It's instantly spiking my glucose levels. It's instantly flooding my body with a hormone that is telling all my cells to hold on to the extra weight. It's resisting my weight loss efforts. You see, we're making it more visceral. We're giving you a more accurate visceral picture of what that behavior is doing to you, and it's in real time. So it's not, oh, I shouldn't eat that sugar because it's not good for me. Eh, what the hell does that mean? When you compare that to the pleasure of a candy bar, right? It's like the candy bar is going to win. When you think of that candy bar, and in your mind, you imagine it going into your body and spiking insulin levels, you know, causing your body to get fatter, you know, instantly, it may have a different impact on you. Okay. And so that's kind of like the general structure. Yeah. It was a constant comfort food growing up, right? But now I can finally choose to avoid it. So here's the thing, right? I love the way you phrase that, is that I can finally choose to avoid it. And that's what we're looking to do, is we're looking to give ourselves the ability to choose. Because for a lot of people, let's face it, we know what it's like. Oh, I want to lose weight. I shouldn't eat that. But then when it comes time to say no or to choose something else, it's almost like that's being hypnotized. You go into this trance where all of a sudden you're eating it. Well, what's compelling you to do that? And again, it's your unconscious representations. And again, the strategy you have available to you. So, anyways, that's one way. There's a lot of NLP in all this, but that's one way, is that it changes your unconscious perceptions and representations and associations you have. And so hopefully you'll be able to look at food a little bit differently. Again, I kind of go back to, almost like, have you ever seen The Matrix? So there's The Matrix, right? And basically there's, you know, he could see the world, but then at some point he could see the code that was creating that world. And so it's just like your computer, right? You're looking at, like a computer program, and it's graphically enhanced so that you can appreciate it. But behind all those graphics and that interface is a bunch of code that won't mean anything to you. Okay. And so again, what we're looking to do here is kind of look at the code behind what's represented to us and kind of make some tweaks there. And hopefully that will change things up. So, all right, cool. Everyone, have a great week. I know here in America, it's 4th of July tomorrow. So have a great time. Enjoy yourself. Again, tomorrow's the all or something day. Right? If you want to go all. But if you don't want to go all, then go something. Okay. You can eat some things that you don't normally eat. Just don't eat everything. Right. Okay. So keep that in mind. So, all right, everyone, have a great week, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Good night, everyone.